How do I know if this is even working?
Ladies of the LLLLV.
Thank you. I'll be here all year. Or as long as you listen. Or really just whichever comes first or is better. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now. Bye. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 14 of Ladies of the LV. A little bit of a hiatus. Past couple of weeks have been crazy, as you know. I feel like we've been trying to do this podcast for like 5 months.
Yes.
I'm so happy to introduce Stacy Zappacosta. Coolest last name. If you want to know how to spell it, to look her up, just let me know. Slide into my DMs. How are you feeling?
I'm good.
Are you are you nervous?
No. Well, no. I'm not used to talking in a microphone.
Well, you don't have to get so close. Okay. Just pretend it's not really there.
Okay.
It's pretty intrusive, though.
It's big.
Okay. We're not going to go down that road. So, Stacy and I met when I was
19
years old, so 8 years ago? Yeah.
I feel like you were turning 19, though.
Yes. I was only 18 when we met.
I feel like you were such a baby.
I was. We were doing a show together, and didn't really make sense for us to be friends. I mean, if you think about it, is that weird to say?
Because I was old.
Well, not just because of age.
I was your could-be 17-year-old mother.
You could have been.
Yes. Because at the time, I would have been 36.
Yeah.
Because we always told people that I had you when I was 17.
Yeah.
When they'd be like, oh, is this your mom? Yes. Yes, I was her teenage mother.
And we would tell them, like, people, like, checking us out in, like, the grocery store, which was fun. So, fast friends, I like babysat your kids for you. Mm-hmm. You lived like 4 blocks away from me. I feel like we really became friends though the night that you gave me a ride home because I brought my bike to school.
Oh yeah.
Why don't you dabble in that for us?
Well, was that the night we painted the stairs too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we were painting the steps. And I think we were talking about college and school and your journey back home. Mm-hmm. And we got kind of deep, I think, that night.
Definitely.
Like, quickly. Deep quickly. Yeah. And, but then, but that wasn't the armpit night.
What armpit?
And the underwear night.
Oh, God. It? I don't think we should talk about that.
Okay, but I don't think
Wait, what are you talking about? Hair on...
There was a conversation about armpits and then a conversation about ovulation. But I don't know if that was that night.
It might have been. I don't know.
Okay.
Let's skip over that part.
But we do not ovulate every day, Veronica. Yes. That's one thing we learned.
I've learned.
But anyway, so we were getting ready to go home and I see this bike and it's legit like a bike from The Wizard of Oz.
It's a beach cruiser.
It was so cute.
Yeah, I still have it.
But I was like, is this a prop? And then you're like, no, it's my bike. And it was storming.
Yes.
And so we offered to stick it in our
green van.
Yeah, it's in our minivan and drive you home.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was really like, I feel like in every friendship, there's a moment where you know, you fall in love. That was our moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I met you, one of the things I think we really connected on was the fact that Stacy and I are both from Catasauqua, born and raised. And I don't think people realize the pride that a lot of Catasauquians have, where it's like, you're just very proud to be from that place.
Or I think there's two separate parties.
Yeah.
There are those people who are very proud of being from a small town and having that sense of connection and history with people. And then there's people that want to get out and never return.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when you tend to be a people person, which we both are, you like to have that connection and that history. and being able to walk down the street and see people that you know, or people that you went to high school with, or people that you're, you know, were your teachers, or
the UPS man.
Sure. And I enjoy that. And I know you do too. So I think we share that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, being from Caddy, we kind of talked a little bit about that.
Yeah. So right after I met Stacy, she offered me a summer job because I was in college. So she's like, what are you doing all summer? And I was like, I don't know, probably riding my bike around the town. And she offered me a job because she is a center director. Is that your official title?
It is, yes.
Center director at an early learning center in the Lehigh Valley. I won't say exactly where, right?
Sure.
How many kids are in under your care every day?
So right now with summer camp, it's about 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the school year, it can be anywhere from 75 to 85.
Mm-hmm. So I had no idea prior to working at your center how intense it really is. So Stacy's center is probably one of, like, I would say you couldn't have any more accreditations, right?
Sure.
She's like very high on the totem pole.
High quality.
High quality, meaning I learned that there are so many different procedures and protocols that just sort of instill and ensure safety and cleanliness and very hands-on caretaking. And because she does such a good job and her staff does such a good job, they have like every possible award and accreditation that you could have, right?
We are nationally accredited and the highest accreditation in Pennsylvania as well.
Wow. So is it something that you always saw yourself doing?
Well, I did want to be an actress. I did have those dreams. I was going to move away after high school to California and be in music videos. So my stepmother around my sophomore year said, you should probably have a backup plan. That may not go very well. So I did go to LTRIC for 2 years to study early childhood education, transferred to Westchester, and did have 3 different majors in Westchester. So I did change it to social work at some point. But my sister and brother are 13 years and 15 years younger than I am. And going to Westchester, I was very close to my dad's house, and I worked for my dad while I was going to school. We owned restaurants, and I spent a lot of time with my younger sister and brother, and they were in Montessori, which is a different philosophy. It's very child-oriented, very child-led, and the teacher is kind of more of a facilitator. They set up the environment, they set up the classroom, and they give the children kind of a plan for the day. And they kind of lead themselves through the day. And I was fascinated by this. And I spent time in the classroom, and I spent time with the center director because she was a friend of my stepmother's. And I really felt during that time that I wanted to go into teaching. It's definitely something that I wanted to do. However, I was thinking more elementary age, and my major was elementary. And after I graduated, I was working at a golf club, and one of the members' wives had just opened an early childhood program. And he said, hey, you should talk to her, maybe get in there. And I did, and I worked in the preschool classroom. And it was, I think back now, being a young teacher, and I'm very grateful for those parents for being very patient with me, because when you're a new teacher, you don't have life experiences, you don't have wisdom. I didn't have children at that time. Very different going in and being a new teacher and not having some of those things. And it was definitely a learning experience, but I had a wonderful center director there as well that mentored me. And I had my oldest while I was a part-time teacher and part-time center director there. And I just was able to take my child to work with me and teach children, and it was this perfect combination.
Mm-hmm.
And you being a teacher understand this, kids just, when they fuel you, mm-hmm. like they every time you walk into a classroom and you get them engaged and they're your audience, and maybe that's that actress in me too coming out,
mm-hmm.
Where you can just put yourself on stage and teach them, and those light bulbs go off, and that's what I've been doing now. And I miss being in the classroom. I'm a set director, but I'm a working center director, so I'm in the classroom every day, even though I'm not in the classroom all day. Yeah. But those are my favorite moments. I eat breakfast with the young toddlers most mornings, and they're 12 to 24 months old, and it is just my favorite part of the day.
Honestly, working in the infant room was by far like my most favorite job I've ever had in my whole life. Just being the caretaker for infants all day long and getting to experience those milestones and being a part of it with their family, coolest thing ever.
And we're very unique in that we are an employee-based child care center, so we are right there with the employees and the parents. So those families are in four or five times a day, and the moms can come in and nurse, and the dads can come in and give bottles, and the moms and dads can come in and pat their child down for nap. So you really get connected with the families, and it's a great work home balance for them. And you get that relationship piece with families that you typically don't always get at childcare centers, because you'll see the families at drop off and you'll see them at pickup. Most of the time you won't see them throughout the day. But at my center, you see them throughout the day, many times throughout the day. So especially with the infant room, it's really hard to drop off your baby. It's really hard to relinquish this little being that you just spent all these months nurturing and handing them over to a different person, and sometimes a stranger. But when you can come in and spend time with that caregiver, it's a wonderful opportunity for us.
Also, shout out to Michelle. Best coworker I've ever had. She'd go on her break and buy spicy guac at Fresh Market, bring it back. We'd have a little party in the back. I don't know if I'm allowed to tell you that, but
Okay. Michelle's been with me for 12 years, pretty much since we opened the center.
If there's
both of my infant teachers, Tara and Michelle, have been with me for since open for 12 years.
And they're amazing.
Mm-hmm. And we just brought on a new infant staff, and it seems to be working out great.
Yay! And hashtag love Linda.
Oh, Linda.
She was the best. Yes. Truly the best. Yes. Okay, so one of my questions is, what do you think makes you... So, in my biased opinion, I think you're an amazing leader. Just because I always felt like you were so hands-on, and you would never ask anyone to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. But what do you think is, like, the most important quality of being a good leader?
For me, it's self-reflection. It's always leaving the day and saying, what could I have done better? Mm-hmm. Because no one's perfect. There are no perfect leaders. There are no perfect managers. So sometimes it's just, what can I do better? And then asking your staff, what can I do better? Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get that criticism, and we do send out surveys every year that our staff can take and our parents can take, and it's anonymous, so sometimes you get some feedback that you don't always want to hear, but I always want to grow from that. So I do try to self-reflect and learn from that and be a better listener. Mm-hmm. We get so busy, and you have responsibilities, and you have the responsibilities of just facilitating a program, that sometimes when your staff come into you and they're really struggling, either in work or in their life, and you have to stop to listen to them, can be tough because you have all those other things you're thinking, oh, well, I need to get this done. I have a budget to do. I have billing to do. But at that moment, you really need to give that time to your staff because they give so much of their time to you every day. And our field is not a high-paying field, so we expect so much from these caregivers, and unfortunately, they're not rewarded monetarily. We get rewarded through hugs and smiles and amazing accomplishments and milestones and relationships, which is huge. Mm-hmm. But so I think just really being a good listener and being able to self-reflect and be willing to improve, and everyone has to grow. You can never say I'm perfect at my job. If you go into your job every day and say, I'm great at this job, I am perfect, you are going to fail because we are not. You have to go in every day and be willing to work harder and be willing to change and be willing to be flexible. And that helps me be a better leader. And I'm a people person, so I hope that is helpful to being a leader. don't know.
You're so good, Stacey. Do you remember that amazing woman who was only there for a short time because she moved? But her name was Kathy, and she really tried to get me to love Jesus.
Yes.
Do you remember her?
Yeah.
She was amazing.
Yes. We were just talking about her the other day. I've had some. I have an incredible staff right now. I always say, you know, I am a center director, but my center is not anything without my staff. My staff are pretty amazing, and we've had amazing teachers that have come through like you and have moved on to other directions and other career paths, and sometimes have stayed in teaching. But it's fun to watch where everyone has gone after they left us, and hopefully they take a piece of us with them.
Oh my gosh, I think about it all the time. It was the best job. You were the best boss. I had so much fun. I kept coming back, mm-hmm. You know? I would like leave and then come back.
We enjoyed you because you were all about the kids. And in early childhood education, it is about the children.
Yeah. Well, what else would it be about?
Well, because we all have paperwork in our jobs, and we all have expectations in our jobs that go along with whatever we're doing in the classroom. I mean, this goes for any age teacher. You have your lesson plans, and you have your assessments, and you have your parent-teacher conferences, and you have emails you have to answer. But really, you have to be present for those children.
Hell yeah.
And that's, I mean, if you can do that every day and be intentional, being present, you're succeeding, and hopefully those children are getting the most from you. And you would bring your guitar, and you would sing, and you would be energetic, and you'd leave little notes and bring like positivity and everything. And that was,
hey, this podcast is about you. Okay, but thank you.
Sure.
So going back to when I met you, you were really essentially a single parent to your three children.
Yeah,
you were in a relationship, and we can talk about your relationship history. However, you've really kind of raised your kids Monday through Friday mm-hmm. on your own. So what has that been like for you?
Well, it's who I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am a mother. I'm a teacher, and I have my center director, and I'm a fiance and a partner, but my identity will always be mom. And my children are very close together. They're all under 2 years apart. So it's very hard for me to even think of my being a mom to even one of my children. Because when I think of being a mom, they all, like, they're just like a clump. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like my three kids. It's they just feel like they've just been this appendage. And it's been really hard the past year because my oldest went away to college. And she stayed at her dad's this summer to work. And it's been the first time in 19 years that I was like a mom of two. And that was really, really tough. But my focus has always been on my children. And if I was in a relationship at the time, that was a plus. Mm-hmm. But my focus would always be on making sure my children had a healthy, loving environment to grow up in and be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So
you are such an amazing mom, and your kids are the direct reflection of that. Stacy's kids are just like, I think the thing that you've done so well with the most is you've really just nurtured their individuality, and you've totally let them love what they love to do, love who they love. Like, you've never done anything but just nurture them. Even Anna, who I know is more edgy and, you know, wanted to like throw around curse words in high school and really like test the limits. And I feel like you've never, I mean, you've obviously,
they have to have boundaries,
right?
Children have to have boundaries. They crave boundaries.
Yes.
That's one thing as a parent, you have to give boundaries. Everybody has their own set of boundaries and how long you're going to push them. But that's one thing I do hope that I've allowed my children to be individuals.
They are.
And they are completely three different children.
Yeah.
Same parents, pretty much the same upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing has really changed. They are very different, and I love them for that. And they're amazing, and I couldn't be more prouder of them and the direction that they're going. And it's okay to mess up as a kid. And I hope when they have, and they have, because all kids do, and we sit down, we talk about it, and we say, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You can mess up. We all mess up. What have we learned from that? And what can we go forward and change? And how can you be a better person? And they have to understand there's consequences. And you have to be straight up with them. And I think I'm a pretty straight up person when it comes to a lot of people in my life. And sometimes that can be a bad thing. But with your kids, you cannot sugarcoat things, not in these days with social media and technology mm-hmm. and the dangers out there. You have to be really open and honest with them. My mom, I love my mother, but there was things that she just didn't talk to us about. And you kind of learned on your own, and then you're kind of trying to make sense of things. And if there's no one to talk to about that, you can sometimes make decisions that have really bad consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've done an amazing job with them. And it's so weird to see them as adults in the world.
I know.
Because when I met you, they were in elementary school and middle school. And I would go pick them up from Sheckler.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jack was in preschool.
Oh my gosh. No! That's so weird. So, throughout all of this, we were just talking about this before we started. Even though I know your kids have always been number one to you, you've had relationship after relationship. You're saying you're sort of like a serial monogamist.
Well, I haven't been single in 21 years.
That's crazy.
And I'm 44. I'm 44.
What?
I know. But, yes. So, I like being in a relationship. There's some people that don't need that. I like the companionship. I like being in a relationship. But I wasn't always good being in a relationship because I'm very introspective, maybe too much, where sometimes when you're really introspective, you kind of go into yourself.
Yeah.
And you build these walls.
You disappear.
Yes.
I remember this.
Yes. And I do, like physically disappear and emotionally disappear.
You like won't respond to people.
Correct. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to be a burden on somebody, and you're also trying to figure shit out. And I'm not one to let other people solve my problems for me or help me. I kind of want to do it on my own.
That's like so contradictory to always wanting to be in a relationship.
I know. Isn't that weird?
How does that work?
I don't know. But maybe that's why it didn't work out. I don't know. That's why I'm trying to fix shit. So, yeah, they didn't work out for... Well, so I had a really nice relationship. And I think when we first met, I was like, oh, my ex-boyfriend lived on this street when I first dropped you off. Because I had...
Oh,
yes,
from high school.
Yes. So I had a long-term relationship from my senior year of high school up until my... until I went into Westchester. So, you know, for four and a half years. And... I thought I was going to marry this kid, but then I was like, I can't marry this kid. Like, I haven't, like, sown my wild oats. Like, I haven't explored. So I was like, I need to go out and explore. And I went to college, and I did a lot of exploration. and in exploration, I mean, I, you know.
She read books.
Yes.
In the library.
No, I drank. I went out. You know, I had fun. I had a really great group of people I met in college, but it was kind of not your typical college crowd because I transferred into Westchester. Mm-hmm. And I remember my stepmom was like, oh, I'll hook you up with my friend's nanny. And it's a really great group of girls. It'll be a great place to live. And they were super great, but they paid their utilities by having 7 kegger parties in the basement, and we would sell tickets, and that's how we'd make our money. And a lot of my friends were in bands, and we were in this Westchester music scene kind of era, and it was a lot of fun. And then I met my children's father, and he had owned a skateboard company at the time, and we did some traveling with that, and I ended up settling down into that relationship fairly quickly after 4.5 months of knowing him. So
wow, I didn't realize it was that short.
Yes. And he's a great guy and wonderful father and super funny and charming and smart. But, you know, we were 24, 26. He was 26, I was 24. So pretty young. And
so you don't think you know who you are when you're 26?
some people do.
I'm just kidding.
I didn't. You know, I didn't because... So I left Caddy, and I was very sheltered. because when you grow up in that town, you can be very sheltered. And remember, this is pre-social media.
Pre-cell phones.
Yes, definitely. I mean, my friend had a car phone, which was attached with a cord in her Honda Accord. Like, that was big time. She was rich. But we did not have social media. So I went to Westchester, and I got put into this group of people who were, like, partiers and in the music scene. And, you know, here I'm this, like, young kid from Catasauqua, Pennsylvania. And it was, like, a huge wake-up call. And I got exposed to different things that I never saw before. And then things moved fast, and then I got married and had a baby. So I don't know if I ever had a chance to kind of really discover who I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
I don't.
So, okay. So do you think you've always wanted to be in a relationship because purely of the companionship, or do you think it's been more of like a safety feeling for you? Because you were in one for so long from high school throughout college.
I like companionship because I like intimacy, but then the other side of me will push that intimacy away. So it's, I don't know. It's,
why do you think you do that?
Because I like to control things. So if I am, if this relationship is going to go down the tubes, I'm going to cause that rather than them walking away from me.
Wow.
So I will choose to make that relationship end before they have a chance to. It's being self-destructive.
Wow. I never knew this about you until this moment.
I mean, that's not healthy, Veronica.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying that I'm saying from 24, I had every intention of being in my marriage with my children's father and having this healthy, happy marriage. There was a lot of stressors in that marriage that caused the demise. If we would have been together longer and had cultivated each other and that relationship and that marriage before having kids, possibly that marriage would have lasted longer. So we went into this marriage hardly knowing each other, having a child right away, and then we got transferred every 12 to 18 months with his job, and then had, so we moved 5 times and had 3 children in 7 years. That's a lot of change.
Yeah.
And I would be by myself in these moves. So I had no family around, I had no friends around, and I had multiple children to take care of, and I wasn't working. So that, I think, kind of, it just ended up not being a healthy place for either of us. And then I went right into another relationship that was probably not the best choice either for either one of us. So
that's when I met you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me, like, to hear you talk about the fact that you push it away. What's interesting is that I feel like the relationship you're in right now appears to be incredibly fulfilling and balanced and super happy.
Yes.
So how have you found that and not tried to push it away?
Because of him. Mm-hmm. So I think when people say you need to find someone that completes you, I think that's when it completes you, it shouldn't be someone that is going to make you happy. Their job should not be to make you happy. Their primary responsibility in your relationship should not be to make you happy every day, but who they are can add to making you happy, and their personality. And so my fiance now is very different than I am. And that's a good thing. That doesn't always work in relationships. For me, it does. And in the beginning of our relationship, we were both kind of trying to get to know each other. We've been together over 4 years now. So in the beginning of our relationship, it was kind of getting to know each other. And I was fascinated by him because of he's in the forensics field, and he was a firefighter, and we went to high school together, but didn't even really know each other in high school. But I always thought he had really nice hair because it was like auburn. And I was like, oh, he's got nice hair. But he was in my sister's grade, so we didn't really know each other in high school. But I would talk to him at parties, and he just, I don't know, he fascinated me. And at the beginning of our relationship, I think we were both kind of feeling each other out in terms of how to approach each other in this relationship, whether to trust each other and where this relationship was going to go. And so that was kind of the first 2 years, because I was apprehensive about being in another long-term relationship, and am I ready for this, and with my kids, and he had come out of another relationship too. But about 2 years ago, he suffered a heart attack, and it was what they call a widowmaker, and a lot of people do not survive. But he had just happened to be investigating a case at a hospital. So when he had this episode, they were able to bring him back and medevac him to Lea Valley Hospital. And
does that mean helicopter?
Yes, which he used to ride with medevac. So the people that took him on the medevac helicopter actually knew him.
So what hospital was he at prior to?
Pottstown.
And they...
Pottstown or Pottsville, one of those.
Why wouldn't they just treat him there?
The cardiac unit at Lea Valley Hospital was better.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So why is it called a widowmaker?
Because it usually takes someone and causes them to be a widow. They die and, yes, the person no longer has a spouse.
Okay. I'm sorry. Continue. I have so many questions.
Yes. But he came out of that with a whole different mindset.
Because he died.
Yes. And he had this second chance at life. And I was so grateful that he survived. But there was a different outlook that he took after this. And it was a very mellow, I'm not going to stress out about things in my life anymore. And I want to be happy. And I want you to be happy. And if you want to be on this journey with me, you're more than welcome. But I am not going to look to you anymore to make me happy. We can be happy together, but I am not going to be controlled every day at whether or not I'm making you happy enough to be in this relationship.
So did he voice this to you, or was this like understood?
Oh, yeah. No, it was voiced, because things change with the way that you, you know, talk about things and, you know, little things like if I was out too long somewhere, and, you know, in the past it would have been like, well, what were you doing? And like, where were you at? And just little things like that. But I think what we figured out is, and I told this to you earlier, and I just saw this quote the other day, is like, you can't harness your happiness to someone else's shoulders. Like, you can't be happy only because there's someone in your life making you happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you can be happy together, that's great. But I can't look at him every day and expect him to fulfill my life by making me happy. That's not his responsibility. It's my responsibility to make myself happy. And if we can do that together, that's great. But when you say you complement each other, you can complement each other, but you shouldn't complete each other in that the only way you're going to be happy is if this person's in your life making you happy.
Do you think you would have believed this philosophy 20 years ago?
Yes. So I think in my teens and my early 20s, I was very independent, and I didn't really care what other people thought, and I was fearless. And then I got sick in my late 20s, and I looked at things differently because I wasn't always feeling well, and not feeling well, you're not always the life of the party anymore. You're not able to be that joyful person that you were to other people. And so you start doubting your self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of took over for a while. So, and that's still, I think I still struggle with that, that you don't want to be a burden. I don't want to be a burden. And so now with that new philosophy he has, sometimes I'm like, like, am I making him happy? Because now I'm, like, feeling really crummy, and I'm probably not the best person to be around. But
right.
So I struggle with that.
Yeah. So I know you're talking about more of, like, a physical ailment. This was when you had discovered that you had, was it Crohn's disease?
No, it's similar to Crohn's, I should say. It's autoimmune. Mm-hmm. It's just a whole bunch of stomach issues and food issues, mm-hmm. and histamine issues.
Yeah, I remember one of the first times I met you, you had like a steak in your purse.
It's purse steak. Purse steak or... Yeah.
You couldn't like finish it or something. Yeah. And you just whipped
it out. I eat a lot of meat. I'm very protein rich. So sometimes, you know, a bag of chips isn't going to cut it. So you want a piece of steak in your purse.
But, so this is more of a physical situation, but I know that you have severe anxiety.
Yes.
And when did it first, I mean, I know when I met you, we would kind of like sort of joke about it in like a self-deprecating way. Like when we would watch Bridesmaids and the woman on the plane, like we would laugh about it, but I feel like.
That could really happen.
Well, it could.
Yes.
I think I, just from personal experience, I empathize with you more because I realize how debilitating it can be. Mm. So how old were you when you first realized you had this type of anxiety?
I had my first anxiety attack probably at 22. And then they have been pretty consistent since then. I mean, when I was pregnant with Anna, and after I had Anna, I felt really good. And it kind of comes in waves. And it's very based on my health. So if my health is feeling good, my anxiety is fairly good. It's been over 20 years.
So with the philosophy of, you know, your significant other should not be the person that you harness your happiness on, but how does anxiety come into play with that? Like, do you let him know when you are feeling a certain way, or is it just understood? Does he help you through it, or do you rely on yourself?
So he's pretty good. He bought me pulse ox monitors that I can stick on my finger and make sure that I'm breathing and I have a pulse. Those are pretty fantastic.
Do you worry that you're not breathing?
Well, with my anxiety, like I feel like I can't breathe or swallow. So he got me a pulse ox monitor that I can put on my finger and it will tell me my oxygen level and my pulse rate. So that's great. I like having those. So that's helpful. And I don't know, he'll just hold me sometimes and then he'll talk me through it. He's not dismissive, which I think is important when you have anxiety. You don't want someone to say, "You're good, get over it, you're fine," in a dismissive way. Mm-hmm. It's okay for someone to say, "You're okay, like your coloring's good, you're breathing, you seem okay." But you know, it's not like someone that has the flu. You can't be like, "Oh, you'll feel better in a couple of days. It'll be okay."
No.
You're all right. Just take this Tamiflu. You're good. It is. And everybody has different anxiety. And I think, you know, sometimes they're like, "Oh, I had a panic attack. It was so bad." You know, but there are like legit panic attacks. Like my panic attacks, I've been transported to the hospital numerous times in an ambulance because I thought for sure I was dying.
Yeah.
And so there are panic attacks, and then there are like panic attacks that are so debilitating that you really and truly think this is it. This is my last moment on earth and I am dying. And that's hard. It's hard to be in a relationship. It's hard for someone not to have those symptoms or not to have panic attacks or anxiety and understand it. And I get that. Because there's things that people go through in life and you can say, "Oh, that's really awful," but you don't really know until you've been in their shoes.
Yeah.
So you can't, you know, if you've never had chemotherapy, you can't say to someone going through chemotherapy like, "Oh, I understand it's got to be really bad." No, I don't understand. I've never been through that. I don't know what that's like.
Yeah. So what's the best coping mechanism you've figured out for anxiety?
Well, I did do medication for a couple years, and I would never say to someone, "You shouldn't medicate for anxiety or depression." But what I tried to do in the past probably 8 to 9 years is really look at your body functions. Like, why do I have anxiety? Why is my body telling me that I can't breathe right now or I can't swallow? Like, why is my brain so powerful that it's telling me that these parts of my body are shutting down? Because it seems really real.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my DNA coded where it will tell you if you're missing certain methylation pathways and how you can help those methylation pathways through diet, through mineral deficiencies, and what you can do to help that. What foods work for you, what foods don't work for you, because if your stomach is not and your gut is inflamed or not healthy, all of those things have a lot to do with your mental health. And I'm not saying it's going to cure you, but they have even done research where they have realized that schizophrenics are deficient in a certain mineral or vitamin. And if they just are able to give those schizophrenics that vitamin or mineral, it can help their symptoms without medication, because they've taken their DNA and looked at it and seen where they had those parts of the DNA that are missing or the pathology. So all those little things that I have looked at, you know, how can I feed my body healthier food choices? I don't drink alcohol anymore. I limit my caffeine. I exercise a lot.
When's the last time you had alcohol?
When Jack was born, so 15 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're around it all the time.
Yes.
Is it annoying?
To be around people that are intoxicated? Not annoying. Sometimes it's humorous. Sometimes I have to leave just because it's, you don't understand what they're... what they're seeing, like, why is that so funny? It's really not that funny, but they're on the floor laughing. So sometimes
you took me out for my 21st birthday and you didn't have a lick of alcohol.
Nope. And I look at too, is it self-medication? Like, would I drink to help self-medicate my anxiety? And I don't want to go down the path of self-medicating. Like I said, I'd rather look at my health and then look at my mental health, you know, where I'm at right now. Am I stressed at work? Are my kids stressing me out? Is that why I'm feeling so much anxiety? Because that has a lot to do with it, too. If mm-hmm. you have stress around your life, your anxiety is going to get worse. I mean, I have social anxiety, too. And then I have anxiety of dying, like being on an airplane. I know.
Little metal tubes.
Yeah, it's not natural, little metal tubes floating in the sky. But I do it. I have to fly to get places, so I do it. But I put on my headphones and I kind of concentrate.
My gosh.
And I laugh. You have to laugh. I mean, sometimes I think my sense of humor is lost on some people, but...
Not on me.
Well, you know, like, I had this fingernail, okay?
Okay.
And I banged it in a cabinet.
Ow!
A couple months ago. Wait. And it turned black. Ugh. Like, the whole thing was black. And people were like, oh, it's going to fall off. It's going to fall off. I'm like, no, this is not going to fall off. Like, I'm not going to be one of those people that their fingernail falls off. But for months, I had this black pinky nail. And people would be like, oh, what did you do? I was like, slammed it in the cabinet door. And lo and behold, the past couple weeks, I see this, like, it's, like, inching off. And this fingernail is growing underneath it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is actually happening. And then I was at work and it was just hanging, literally hanging by a thread. And my assistant director was like, I'm going to yank that off.
No!
I'm going to pull that off. And I'm like, no, it hurts. It hurts. But every day she'd like yell at me that she was going to yank it off. So then I was doing something at work and it flung on the floor, across the floor. So I was like, well, you know what? So I put it on her keyboard because I was like, she wanted this thing to fall off so badly. And, I got ready to record her reaction to this, and she kept not looking at her keyboard. So finally, I was like, hey, can you look up this document for me? And she turns around, and she starts typing on the keyboard, and the thing is, like, flopping like popcorn. And I'm like, look at the fingernail. And finally, I'm like, what is that on your keyboard? And she's like, what are you talking about? I don't know. And I'm like, look. And then she looked closer and realized it was my fingernail that fell off.
So. I love you so much.
Yeah, you know, you have to laugh.
You are so much more knowledgeable than you realize. You just gave, like, a book's worth of advice. You know that, right?
Well, I've lived 44 years now. I have so much more to learn. And everybody does. I mean, that's why I like talking to people. And if I didn't work with younger children, I would work with the senior population, because I think if you just spent time talking to someone older than you, mm-hmm. and what they've gone through and what their life was like and what they've learned. And no one's life is perfect. And whether you're married to your high school sweetheart for 80 years, which is wonderful, or whether you've had three marriages or three failed marriages, or you never get married or you never have kids, that's okay. That's your journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, through that journey, you're going to learn things that you're going to be able to share with someone, and they're going to be able to walk away and have something that kind of stays with them and clicks with them.
Can you come over every day and just give me your advice? Okay, so I have ending questions that I usually ask.
Okay.
One of them is, what do you love the most about yourself?
That's hard.
I know, soup's uncomfortable. But I could give you like 10 things if you can't think of anything.
I can tell you what I don't like about
myself.
What I like about myself. My resiliency.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, every day I fight to live my best life, even though I might feel like I can't go on living, I will choose to make the best of the time I have. And my fiance has shown me that as well. Like, you, it can end at any moment, and you just need to make life the best that you can every day you wake up.
Well, shit. Okay. The last question then is a fill in the blank. And it is, if women ruled the world, blank.
I think someone else said this, but shit gets done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. We're like the world's best multitaskers. Mm-hmm. And there's some good men who multitask well. But I think we're doers, mm-hmm. and we get stuff done. And we get stuff done with compassion most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I have one more question. I don't usually ask it. But I know you were saying that your brain is always, always moving and thinking and feeling and processing. And what do you wish the world knew about someone like that?
Well, A, we don't always have resting bitch face. We're just really deep in thought. So, and I think for me, people assume sometimes if you can't give an answer right away, or you come, that you don't know what you're talking about, or that you don't care about them. Because I know for me, sometimes I just want to give a better answer or the best answer that I can, and sometimes I don't have that answer right away and I need to think about it. And that doesn't always mean that I don't care about what you're asking me, or I don't, and that I won't come back to you at some point, but sometimes I need to think about that, let me come back. Or we have so much going on in our heads that it's hard for us to pinpoint what we want to answer right away because there's so much going on. And I don't know. I feel like that meme where they're like, dogs, you know, someone asks you a question and then you're like all of a sudden talking about a squirrel. And the first question was something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, I love learning about people and talking to people. And I feel like being an empath, like I take in everything that people tell me, and then that weighs heavily on me, and I think about that constantly the rest of the day. Like, I'll walk away from here and think about everything we talked about, and I'll keep thinking about it.
Oh God, do you want me to send you home with some like lavender oil?
No, but that's a good thing, because like I said, because from that I will learn something about myself, and I'll learn something that I didn't know about you, and then I'll think, well, I need to reach out to Veronica and see how she's doing, or say hello. And it's not a bad thing.
I love you so much.
I love you too.
Thank you for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Who would have thought?
I know.
7 or 8 years ago, painting the stairs.
I feel like it was longer than that.
I know. It wasn't. I mean, it's a long time ago.
But we did like 8 shows together, and then I haven't.
What?
Or maybe I was in 8, or I was, I don't know.
Nothing will ever top the memory for me of dancing in my wig cap. And my leotard.
Oh, yes. With Peter Pan. Yeah, because there's nothing sexier than a nude unitard. Nothing. with a wig cap.
I actually loved it. I'm not going to lie. All right. Well, thank you for being on Ladies of the LV.
Thank you for having
me. You've been an amazing guest, and I think people have really learned a lot. Hopefully you've stuck with us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
On behalf of everyone at Ladies of the LV, and by everyone I mean just me and Amy, don't be salty, Amy, I said your name. I would really like to thank you for listening, and if you like what you hear, please head over to iTunes and subscribe for future episodes, because we're going to have a lot of badass females on here. And by a lot, I mean hundreds, maybe even millions. Can anyone tell me the exact population of the Lehigh Valley? I don't know why I have to be so aggressive with numbers. Oh my goodness. Anyway, also, please feel free to visit veronicawithaglassofbubbly.com, where we have the podcasts and more blogs and fun things for you to read while you're sipping on a glass of champagne or the bottle. No judgment. We all do what we need to do.